From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Sandy Belson is the interim planning manager for the City of Springfield. Thank you so much, Sandy Belson, for being here today on the Oregon Grapevine. I thank you for your time.
I'm happy to be here.
Housing, clearly an issue in this day and age. It's always been an issue, but it really has hit the highlight at this point. And, of course, housing options range from homelessness to apartments, mansions, kind of everywhere in between. And I'd like to start focusing this conversation on the issue of middle housing. And what is that? And specifically, Oregon House Bill 2001, which has received some publicity. And if you could just start with an overview of that, I would appreciate it.
Sure. So middle housing is a term that has been coined to cover the type of housing that would be between your single-family detached home and large apartment buildings. So middle housing would include typically duplexes, triplexes, quad or fourplexes, cottage clusters when you have a grouping of smaller homes together, often on one lot, although they could be on separate lots. Some people call accessory dwelling units part of the middle housing. Others leave accessory dwelling units out. But it's the type of housing that would be available in older neighborhoods before we had such sort of single family home subdivisions that we had since become the norm. So if you look at older cities, they're often townhomes is another type of middle housing, or small apartment buildings that might have four units or even six units around a courtyard. So it's this middle type of density between the single family and then your larger scale apartment buildings that many modern cities have not been building much of that housing type.
Let me go back for a second. Why are ADUs considered by some, it feels political, maybe it's not, but why are they considered by some municipalities to be middle housing and some not?
I'm not sure I can really answer that question. I guess because they often are detached from the main house, but again, that's a definitional distinction. And so I think some cities just start at duplex and then go up from there in terms of being attached units.
How about Oregon House Bill 2001? It received some publicity. Legislation often is kind of complicated or not. What is it in its kind of simplistic form, and how does it relate to this issue?
House Bill 2001 did several things, but one of them, as you're talking about, is it is requiring medium-sized cities to allow duplexes on any lot in a residential zone that would normally allow a single-family home. And for larger cities like Springfield, where we have to allow middle housing types on any lot where we would allow a single-family home within residential zoning districts. Many cities, including Springfield, have zoning that would typically not allow a fourplex in a low-density residential zone, at least as of right, maybe through some special use type of process. But someone could just not come in and say, I want to build a fourplex on my lot without going through extra hoops at this time. So House Bill 2001 is saying anyone who has a lot that you could build a single-family house on in a residential zoning district needs to also be able to allow a fourplex. There's some nuance to that in terms of minimum lot size, but that's the idea. So it opens up the housing types that you would be allowed to create within various neighborhoods, existing neighborhoods and new neighborhoods. And what it does is it mixes that housing type. So it starts to require us to legislate by housing type Typically, in the past, we've legislated more by density, but now we're going to be saying any of the single-family or middle housing types are allowed in our low-density residential district, and it won't be so exclusively single-family homes.
Has that been controversial? Have there been people who are upset by that, or has it been pretty smooth in Springfield? How's it working?
So we haven't had people that are upset by it vocally, but we are just now starting our public outreach phase. So we are in the process of updating our code, and we have draft code language available for people to review. And that's the focus of our project this summer, is to get the public input on the parts that we can tailor to Springfield. Some of it, we don't have a choice. It's mandated by the state. But there are ways that we can affect some of the regulations to meet our context. And so we are asking for the public's input on that now as we speak.
I think it's easy to be comfortable when you have your house and you have your lot and you have your kind of spot and you don't really want it to get complicated and you don't want more people living next door. And it's how do you think people can be convinced and educated from a more holistic point of view about housing and to make it kind of work for everyone?
Well, I would base it on our experience with accessory dwelling units. So a few years ago, we loosened up the requirements for accessory dwelling units. We provided some financial incentive by waiving the system development charges that we would normally assess when somebody adds a new dwelling unit to their property. And so we've had quite a number of accessory dwelling units that have been added into various neighborhoods throughout Springfield. And to my knowledge, we haven't had people becoming really upset about it. So it's an incremental change. These homeowners are often wanting to accommodate a family member. You know, it could be a parent who is aging and wants to have that parent nearby where they can look on them but not necessarily live in the same house. Or for children who are can't afford a place, but want to stay in the same neighborhood. So it's expanding options for people, or maybe as someone is retiring, they would like some rental income so that they can keep up with the cost of living with that rental income if they're on a fixed income otherwise. So it's meeting a variety of needs for families as they change demographics and change their preferences. So I think middle housing will be kind of more of that. Of course, it could be more than one unit being added. It could be up to four units being added next door. But because, in theory, they're going to be integrated into the neighborhood, there shouldn't be huge changes to the day-to-day life of the neighbors.
We are hearing often these days about real estate prices and housing is harder to come by, and if you can find it, you have to make these offers with cash, way more, et cetera. It's much harder than it has been, apparently, and in reality, to become an owner. So how do you see this kind of whole movement of housing and changing of housing and ADUs and middle housing and just kind of the general housing situation either improving or moving ahead, or how do you feel about it?
Well, when you look at historic trends, you can see that housing costs have been increasing much more rapidly than income costs, household income. So we're not on a sustainable course. Housing costs for both ownership and rental households are increasing much faster than their incomes. That's leaving more and more people behind. You know, if you make a significant amount of money and the percentage of your income that you pay for housing shifts from 20% to 40% of your income, well, that 60% is still plenty to cover your food and your transportation and other health needs. But if you are making low income and that shift happens, that means you're making some real choices. Are you going to pay for medical care, or are you going to keep your housing or be able to eat or pay for your prescriptions? So that squeeze of more and more going toward housing costs is in part what's causing the increasing numbers of homelessness in our area, and just really stretching the economics for household budgets. So it's unsustainable to be able to continue in that same trajectory, which has been going on for decades. And I'm really not sure what's going to stop it. But we're trying our best by encouraging a more diversity of housing and more housing types that have the potential to be more affordable.
I was going to ask you about hopeful signs, but I'm not sure I'm hearing them. I'm hearing kind of sustainability. Do you see hopeful signs, or shall we move on?
Well, I think one way that families are coping is you see more generations living together now than they did. You know, maybe the college or high school kids aren't moving out quite as soon as they did in the past. And so they're sharing that house with their parents, or more people sharing a house together. I mean, I, for one, have had housemates over the past 5 years, whereas before I didn't. But that can help share those housing costs. So I think there's more sharing either within families or between friends or housemates. So that's one way that people are coping. I mean, part of the reason for the increasing costs, at least on the ownership side, is housing in the past has been getting bigger and bigger, but our household size is getting smaller and smaller. So what was a 1,200 square foot house from the 50s that maybe had four people in it, today 2,000 square foot with maybe two people in it. Well, you can see that that's not going in the right direction. And what I've seen in the market is that the house size has started to decrease. So we're not building quite as many of the larger houses anymore. They're becoming smaller. The lots are becoming smaller. And so there's a chance then that the costs, even though right now lumber and such are so high, there's other factors, but at least the market is recognizing that we don't need such big houses and that we can't afford as many of those large mansions.
How do municipalities and governmental agencies work together on housing issues? Are they? Let's talk about Eugene and Springfield perhaps specifically, but even more around the state if you prefer. Do you see cooperation and ideas of exchanging and that sort of thing going on?
Well, it's challenging for local governments because local governments do not develop housing. We do regulate it, so we have a part in that, but we don't own the land and we don't develop housing. So it's really a market response. And so we're trying to do what we can to, in a way, get out of the way of people being able to respond and do different things with their property and be able to create some of the housing types that we haven't had if they want to. And I think one of the misconceptions about House Bill 2001 is that it's going to require those middle housing types be built. Well, that's not true. It's only if the owner wants to. We're not mandating that someone build missing housing. It's still going to be the market that responds, basically a property owner saying, I want to do that. So it's a challenge for local governments to really have a big impact on housing. And in the past, the federal government had a much larger role in creating housing, particularly subsidized housing, and that has tapered off. Since the Reagan era, the federal government has had much less involvement in creating housing. So nobody else really has taken up the slack. I mean, recently our state legislature has really focused on the housing for the past few legislative sessions, and they have invested a significant amount of money into housing, but it's expensive. And so that even with the levels of funding that the state is investing, it's coming nowhere close to meeting the need that's out there.
So I have a belief that may be a misbelief, but that when a place is built or when a developer comes in and wants to build, let's say, an apartment complex, are there any kind of regulations in place that they also have to provide some a lower income housing or limited income housing? Or is that just an only if they want to? I mean, are there any of those kinds of rules out there?
Portland has rules like that, but I don't know of any other city in Oregon. One of the things that the legislative branch of our government, state government, did, and I don't remember if it was maybe 4 years ago, that they changed the law, because prior to that, a jurisdiction could not require, there's a term for that called inclusionary zoning, where you have to include low-income housing in your project or contribute money toward low-income housing if you're not going to build it yourself. And that had been not allowed in Oregon previously, but then the legislature passed new laws that would allow that. And Portland has put that in place, but I do not know of another community that has, and Springfield has not.
By not allowed, you mean they weren't allowed to pass legislation that would require it?
Correct.
Let's move for just a moment to homelessness. What are the rules and laws and regulations in place in Springfield for people who are without houses, without homes? What are you doing?
We administer an overnight parking program. So we work with St. Vincent de Paul and Catholic Community Services to identify largely church sites, but we have a couple industrial sites who have agreed to accommodate up to three vehicles or RVs, or in some cases Conestoga huts or tiny homes, to use their parking lot as a place to basically live. And then the city pays for the porta potties and arranges, Sanipac donates garbage collection for those sites. It certainly does not meet the need. We need more sites, but that is what Springfield has to offer. And then there's also just a lot of our social service nonprofit agencies also have programs that help people get into housing or find housing, but it's definitely a challenge. Mainstream Housing, which is based in Springfield, is developing a site for temporary shelters called pallet shelters on their property, and so they're going to manage that. That's a new project this summer. So that will meet some of the homeless needs in Springfield, but we don't have enough options.
Sandy, are there three things that you think the city of Springfield would like to see implemented and changed as they look at the sphere of housing?
So the council has developed a housing strategy, and one of the main points of that strategy is to promote housing of diverse types. And the code update that I mentioned earlier, that we're updating the development code, I think is part of that strategy. We are allowing more diverse housing types throughout the city, not just the middle housing that we talked about, but trying to remove some of the code impediments so that people can really develop the various housing types that we need. So that's one of the strategies. And then there's some other tools like tax incentives that we're considering to promote those housing. Let's see, a second one I would say is for the people that can't afford housing on their own, where they need some kind of subsidy, we are looking for properties that we can purchase and then partner with our nonprofit partners to be able to build that housing. There's been a lot of money coming in from the state and some uptick from the federal funds as well, especially in response to the pandemic. So if we can find some properties that we can purchase and then partner with, like Cornerstone or St. Vincent de Paul or other developers, that's another way that we can really meet the needs of those who can't compete in the market.
I think housing is important, and it affects someone's life in a very fundamental way, but also a home often serves, especially for those who own their homes, it's both an economic investment, but it's also your home. And because it's not just an economic investment, it's also someone's home where they sleep, where they spend time, where they should feel safe and secure. It's not just market economics that is going to be how we solve the housing problem. We have to look at it more holistically and realize that the location of the housing is important, that the accessibility of it, how many people with a disability have full range of options. So we need to think about it in a more holistic sense, and I think the solutions are going to come from that holistic approach, because there's not going to be one silver bullet economic solution that solves the housing crisis.
As we wrap up this conversation and kind of look ahead, have you come across any maybe municipalities elsewhere or here or people or nonprofits that are really kind of throwing out some, maybe they seem wild, but creative ideas that might work?
I can't think of any particular municipalities, but I can point to the state effort. So in 2019, the legislature passed House Bill 2003, and that is requiring municipalities to develop housing production strategies. And as part of the rulemaking for that with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, we put together, I was on that advisory committee, we put together a whole spreadsheet or a whole listing of different options that could be available to cities. And the idea is that going forward, as cities develop these housing production strategies, we can look at that sort of listing of all these options and test them out and then share that information across jurisdictions within Oregon. I think addressing the costs of development, addressing the regulations of development, looking at our land supply, and allowing cities to expand their urban growth boundaries in some cases, making that easier, especially if it's for affordable housing. There's some pilot programs underway with that. In the city of Bend, as an example, I believe. We're trying all these different things out, and it's going to take multi-pronged effort because there's not one single solution. It's looking positive. It's been a focus of the state and certainly of Springfield and Eugene and all the communities in this area. But I think it's really kind of, we're a product of our success. We've made our communities livable areas where people want to come and live, and that's increased our desirability, and it's increased our property values. And in a sense, that's what zoning's about, is to preserve property values. But it's gotten to the point where people that live here can't afford it with the salaries that they make, some of them. It's, as we talked about earlier, it's that trend of housing costs increasing faster than household income. And that's really the crux of the issue.
Thank you so much, Sandy, for talking to me and teaching me a little bit about housing, and I really appreciate your time. You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.